Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, and good afternoon, Ashwini.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I have an announcement to start us off here.
Wonderful.
Meditation is one of the most effective ways to train the attention to be with present moment experience. Join Sangha for our virtual meditation groups, conference call meditation sessions that take place 7 days a week. For more information about this and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And Ashwini, I want to invite folks to put themselves in the queue tonight by pressing *6 and then 1.
We get to hear from people.
Yes. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Ashwini, as I just mentioned, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. All right, I think we're ready here, Ashwini. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Laura from Montreal.
Hey, Laura.
Hi. Well,
thank you for being our first caller.
Well, thank you for unmuting me, I guess. I guesses. Just waiting a minute to see what drops in here. You know, our days are getting shorter, faster, and it's cold. And I am noticing a whole bunch of stories about how this is just such a terrible time of the year, and it's only going to get worse, darker and colder, and it's going to last for, you know, all of those. And yet, I know there's stories, and still, yeah.
Well, you know, Laura, there's something about, I think we mentioned it on the call this morning, there's something about being able to state what is so without it being a story, right? That it is getting colder, it is getting darker faster, and it is going to last at least, 4 months? And we do have a relationship with the dark and cold that is different than when it's bright and sunny. They can all be true. That can all be true. The part that we are working on is there's something wrong with that.
Yes. Or I need to somehow do something to feel good in spite of it. That's in quotation marks. Feel good in spite of it.
Yes, I think you really opened the door to the process piece of this, correct? Because the reason I dislike the cold and the dark is a story. And so, but the fact that it's cold and dark is a fact. Right? That's the distinction that we get to make when we see what the voices are saying and what is so. Because it's always taking what is so and making something wrong out of it. And so then, you're right, we do want to feel better, because what's making it worse than just being cold and dark is the story about what it means for it to be cold and dark. And the feeling that I'm having is because of what the voice is saying, not because it's cold and dark. So the way to feel better would probably be to get out of the conversation and then actually look at how could I be more comfortable? What about the cold and dark really, really is difficult for me? And see if a conversation with the mentor or a conversation with life could actually make a cold and dark time be more comfortable, be lighter, be more pleasant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And some things have dropped in, like I can turn the heat up in my house.
Mm-hmm.
I can work on projects that I haven't had time to work on because I've been going out and about.
Mm-hmm.
I can go to bed earlier.
Yes, isn't that wonderful?
Like, I can hibernate.
Yes. Mm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, I can hibernate. Yeah, it's that wonderful thing about biomimicry, right? There's so much of intelligence. There's so much intelligence in how natural things sink in with the rhythm of life. And we're so out of touch with that. I was just reading something in Ayurveda, right? That the reason that there's so much dis-ease is because we're so artificial in our rhythms.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. It sounds like I have a bit of an assignment here. And it might be as simple as just noticing what's a story and noticing what isn't and talking with the mentor about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes it also feels for me that place of not being able to go out reflects a feeling of being trapped. And that trap of being with that conditioned process, because it's a physical loss of energy, but it's also compounded by not being able to do the things that would often distract us from that voice, right? And so mm-hmm. I remember Sherry saying how the winter months are the best times for practice because we have to stop working and really just being more. And so we're up against the very thing that is there all the time that sometimes we can ignore or distract ourselves from. And so it makes
right.
those cold, dark months both an opportunity and a challenge.
Right. Oh, exactly. So another part of the story for me and at this particular point is it's not safe for me to go out in the dark. And then I see that in the winter when the snow comes, it's not safe for you to go out. It might be icy, right? I mean, so there's always, there's just all of these stories, like they're on paper airplanes being thrown at me and each one says a different thing and it's all ego.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And they can be such tremendous compassion for the person who doesn't want to go out in the dark and who has been in vulnerable places in the dark. And so that the awareness that, okay, this might be framed as a story, but there's something to that story, and to uncover the person who's trapped by the story and has a reason to feel the way she feels, somehow alters our relationship to the story as well.
Right, because there's not that need to tough it out, push through, and ignore that person.
Yes, yes, exactly. We no longer have to tough it out or ignore that person. Or be a sport. There's so much conditioning. But being cheery and graceful about that. To me, there's an enjoyment in being Eeyore.
There's an enjoyment in being, sorry, what?
Eeyore, the donkey in Winnie the Pooh.
Oh, Eeyore.
Yeah. He's thoroughly miserable and completely enjoys it. It's like he embraces that orientation to life. I'm just saying that as another way of looking at it, but that place of You know, we don't have to tough it out. We don't have to be graceful. We don't have to be a sport about it. We don't have to take on the assignment. We could just really look at, well, of course she's afraid of going out in the dark.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there we are.
Here we are.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. And Ashwini, we have another caller here.
All right.
Oh, they just went away. Let me find the next one here. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Andrea in North Carolina.
Hey, Andrea.
Hey, I was not expecting to get unmuted. So doing a little cue practice. I think I just want to share that it's really nice to reconnect to practice. It's been a pretty kind of a loose association for a couple years now. I really just kind of needed to go check out some other things, and I found that in a moment, I guess I got what we might call the gift of desperation about a week ago, and I was like, let me just put on some open air archives, right? That's just the easiest place for me to dip back in. And everything I was hearing just wound up feeling really reassuring, right? And I think my big takeaway was that I've been, you know, I've heard Sherry talk about it as going farther and faring worse. And it was just like the light switch came back on, and I was like, oh, it's the illusion of a separate self that's causing me to suffer. And it was really just that simple. And from there, you know, I started to kind of see what the latest offerings are, the interview technique. I tried it once. It was awkward, but I did it. And not surprisingly, lo and behold, right, a lot of the things that were really bothering me seemed to have kind of eased up a little bit. I actually got up today, and I was like, am I in a good mood? Wow. I really attribute that to practice.
Well, that's such a beautiful process you laid out, right, Andrea, where we do follow the thread, right, that if we believe we're guided, nothing is a mistake. And so we go check something out. And as you said, I was given the gift of desperation. What a disidentified place to say that from, right? Because if I'm not disidentified, I would not have seen it as a gift. And the fact that we have on-ramps to practice that are easy allow us to follow it. And it's a practice route. You have listened to archives before. You've listened to the radio show before. And that's what you're drawn to. And that moment of desperation overrides any of the voices of resistance. And so then we do. We put ourselves back into the gift of the Sangha. And so much of what we hear resonates with our heart, reminds us of why we came to practice in the first place, and we're now willing to follow the threads again. So do you want to talk a little bit more about the interview technique and why it was awkward? Or
I actually have a different question for you, if that's okay.
Of course.
So I just felt a little, like, kind of a little bump in the road there with, I think, part of why I felt like I needed to go check out some other things, right, was a little bit of, I don't know, I think some language that was bothering me, right? And so, like, that idea that, you know, if we believe we're being led, and I think I've just really kind of struggled with getting a little caught up in some of the ideology or the language or some of the presuppositions, right? And so knowing that this is a practice that supported me for so long, I mean, I sat with my first Mountain Zen sitting group in 1997 here in Asheville. Mm-hmm. And have been practicing regularly for like 15 years. Knowing that this practice, right, is something that really has been so helpful for this human, do you have any suggestions when there are those little, it kind of feels like the needle scratching across the vinyl, like everything's good, and then there's this thing, right, that doesn't, the language doesn't quite fit, like, I mean, we're not here to create and cling to beliefs, right? Just any suggestions for working with that?
Yes. Get guidance.
Okay.
Right? I mean, so I remember this with the daily recollection where if you don't know Sanskrit and you're repeating a bunch of words that you don't understand, it doesn't opening to what's the point? I don't get this. I don't understand this. Right? And mm-hmm. the voice would say that if you don't understand it, or you should understand it, or your understanding is the reason you should do this or not to do this, then the guidance that we're turning to is the voices, right? And we keep saying in the daily recollection, I turn to the teachings, I turn to the truth, I turn to the holy order for guidance over and over again, because I don't want to turn to the guidance of the voices. And so mm-hmm. when there's something about practice that feels like it grates, or there's a lack of understanding, or somebody has a problem with it, then the practitioner redoubles their efforts in that spirit of inquiry to reconnect to the practice and try to explore their process around it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Because here's the thing, Andrea, in an awareness practice, we're not asked to believe anything. As you just said, we're not here to create and cling to beliefs. So there's nothing in practice that cannot be explored. In fact, I love that the definition of Buddhism is that it's a dialogue. It's a dialogue between the practice and the practitioner. And so it's an inquiry process. It's a process of friendship, of getting to know something. And what we're actually getting to know is ourselves. So if I encounter something that troubles me, then the encouragement of an awareness practice is not to be in agreement or disagreement with a precept or a teaching. It's to explore what's going on for me that makes me uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to do that is to do it in guidance. Because what the voice wants to say is, well, you've been with this for 15 years. This is the rub. And so perhaps you need to find something else. And we know that the rub in the oyster makes the pearl. It's the thing that will allow us to get past what doesn't allow us to commit unconditionally to something.
Mm-hmm. And what are the current, I mean, I definitely checked out the website about offerings, and I know it's a little late in the year. What are the current options around guidance? Mainly open air
left.
At this point?
We have 6 weeks left of the year long. I mean, that's every day we have 300 people getting together to look at something together every day of the week.
Oh, it's not too late to join. Oh, okay.
No, if you're willing to, and then you have all the archives of every show we've done and all the assignments from the whole year, if that's something that you want to catch up with. But it's live guidance to talk to Sherry every day, day of the week. And there are a couple of workshops that are being scheduled once the email class is over. So that might be an opportunity to get back live with Sandra as well.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much.
Right.
And thank you.
Well, welcome back.
Being open. Okay, great. I will talk with you soon.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Andrea. And if funny, we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, this is Laura in San Diego.
Hey, Laura.
Hey. I literally just got on. I was my evening changed plans, and so I was able to hop on. So I am just here, and it's just so nice to be here. I have been sick for the last 12 days, and I finally got on some antibiotics and so feeling much, much better. And I just, the gratitude of feeling better is just, in, you know, it's just, that's what's like really present in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, just really grateful. Grateful yeah. to not be feeling so physically.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, and just, and the gratitude for cough drops and coughing, mm-hmm. you know, it's just, yes. yeah, just mm-hmm. a gratitude for tools. I caught just the last bit of that conversation of, you know, just, again, even that last, that expression of like, well, can I, you know, what's possible? And it's like, well, there's 6 weeks left. And, you know, the voices would come in and be like, well, you know, that's a severe, you know, all of that stuff. And being mm-hmm. like, to say yes to what's here.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. To just to recognize the ploy that it is, it's always, I mean, as long as it can manipulate time, it has us, right? But
yeah.
here, there's no manipulation of time possible because there's only this
right.
here now. Yeah.
So,
that's such an important point.
And what just kind of dropped in right now when you said that was, so I'm in the Enneagram class, and so was on the call this last Sunday, and it's the first time I'd ever had the experience of, quote, being unmuted but not being able to be heard. And so not needing to really talk about that, but I'm wondering, would it be okay to talk about my process around what I'm what has come up for me around that, or does that feel like to
oh,
save
absolutely.
It?
Oh, absolutely. No, okay. absolutely.
So what came up in the last class or this recent class is this, I was just reading the assignment, and as I got to a specific word, I got a trigger that I haven't experienced in a while, so much so that I just like shut the tab down and was just like, yep, not. Mm-mm. And so then I just sat with that for, you know, a few days, really bringing curiosity to like, what is that? And so there's a process around, if there's something that comes up for me, so I'm quote a nine, right? You know, and that place of hiding, if I, quote unquote, perceive that for, in this instance, practice would not be accepting of what I'm talking about. And so it's been something that's, you know, all, you know, happened a lot for me, but this triggered just kind of, it surprised me, and I didn't realize that this is one of those things. Like I just historically just would not bring up. I would just figure out a way to kind of suppress this and so it's, even now I feel like I'm talking vaguely because like it, some part of me gets really scared to talk about the specifics.
Mm-hmm. So if I may parlay that in the language that we're using in the class, right? So there's a survival behavior that, because whatever it is, conflict or something that feels uncomfortable, the coping mechanism for discomfort is to avoid it, to hide, as you said.
Yeah.
And so then, so don't reveal it to anyone, especially if the survival strategy is also a consequence, not just of not feeling uncomfortable, but also of experiencing, say, the discomfort of what someone might say that might invalidate your experience. So there's many reasons not to share it,
yeah.
which, right, very wise, probably very intelligent to survive the situation you're in. And as Sherry keeps saying, we have the opportunity to go beyond our survival strategies, which I project you did because you were aware of the trigger. You were aware of the conditioned behavior, which is, I'm not going to deal with this, right? But the practitioner holds it in curiosity. And not only holds it in curiosity, chooses to put themselves in the queue and talk about it. Not once, but twice. Right? Yeah. Which, to me, is a place of freedom that we don't see as freedom.
Mm.
Because the freedom that the voices would say to you, you would be free if you weren't triggered. Not if you were willing to accept you were triggered and be willing to look at it. There's freedom.
Mm. Yes. And the other condition is you're free if you can work out the content of this. Like somehow that means talking about it means solving it versus just seeing, just looking, just being with what I'm seeing.
Well, not suffering over it.
Not.
Which is what we do. And that's such an important point, right, Laura? The suffering is supposed to end if the content gets resolved. Well, the suffering ends when you get out of the process of suffering, which could be you could look at it, you could record about it, you could redirect your attention from it. It doesn't matter, right? It's just that not to be bamboozled about the resolution and the fixing makes all of the difference.
Yes.
So I'm not triggered. Great. Now I'm not triggered anymore. I mean, when I'm willing to look at it, I can interview it or work with it. But the point is not that you interviewed it. The point is that you chose not to remain triggered, to disidentify from it.
Mm. Yeah. And even that step around talking about it while triggered. I mean, even like with myself, like being able to see, like I can feel the sensations, I can feel all of that, and not willing to go with the story of fear.
That's right. Yes, because if you're talking about how triggered you are, then you're not going with the story of fear because you're talking about how triggered you are.
Mm.
Not talking about it would be going with the story of fear.
Right.
And avoiding it again, right?
Right. And you know, that place when I looked at the you know, week two part of the Enneagram around the mirrored longings, I think is how it's phrased. It's just that, I mean, so I reread that week, the previous week, which kind of allowed me to get back into the rhythm of being with the assignment. And I thought of the fear book of when, you know, Sherry writes about the part in the book where it talks about like building on the bathroom or, you know, doing construction that allows the person who's afraid to, you know, that whole thing. And I was like, okay, so how can I like back my way into, you know, without forcing myself to just read this and not be triggered, just let, you know, just enter gently. And so kind of reading week twos was, I was able to kind of gently kind of come back into this class that I'm doing, that the heart wants to do, that I want to see through. And without it being like I have to do it a certain way, like how can I do this in a way that supports the heart?
Beautiful. So you said being with the assignment to be with the assignment when ego's having a reaction is to look for a way to be with the person so that she's okay getting back into the class, which is also freedom.
Yeah.
Because I project whatever triggered you is a situation in which the only thing you could do was survive. There was no one there to assist you to actually look at it, to see what, to see if you were afraid, to reassure you, nothing, right? So that's a no-exit place. Survival is a no-exit place.
Mm.
But the wisdom of having a practice of seeking to be with the person, of reassuring the person, of bringing compassion into the situation, it is the freedom, right, Laura? I mean, it's exactly what we're talking at the level of process here, where the freedom is to do something that is not the survival behavior, is freedom.
Mm.
And in some ways, you might never resolve the content, but you have absolutely resolved it on a process level because you're not staying triggered, or you're not doing the thing that you would do before. Okay, force myself to do the class, force her to do something she's uncomfortable doing, and therefore reinforce the fact that her best strategy is to avoid something because it's so uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just felt my whole body relax. I didn't even realize there was more relaxation to happen. So that was really fun to experience just as you were talking.
And it's another important point that, I mean, of course, we could bring any content into practice. But the more powerful place is that without revealing the content, which could be scary for the person who is triggered, the practitioner can always bring the process to practice.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, and really trusting that, you know, if the content needs to be spoken to, I will, but not that to not put, you know, put it, make that a competition.
Yes. Yeah. Because I think the other thing we have to ease into is not identifying with the person who has the relationship with the content.
Right.
Right? Because then, because when you started out the conversation, it was, well, I am a 9. This is how I behave. I got really triggered. I shut down. I did not want to, whatever, right? Which is the narrative of identification, not necessarily the experience of either the human. I mean, we don't know, right? But necessarily the experience of the human being. And
yeah,
so the reason to disidentify and talk about the process assists you to actually see the human being and also disidentify from the I that is the limited me.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sensing, right, what you're talking about. It feels as if those are blended, and yet I can sense the not separation, because that's, but I have a sense of
the
that
difference.
Place around, right, that difference in it, in that but the ego wants to kind of make it really black and white, and and I can just stay with whatever's resonating. I don't know if I can even put words to what's resonating, but there is resonance in that somewhere.
Yes, because we have an experience of it. I mean, when you do a two-handed recording, the you are talking from the identification. And if you do it enough, you can realize when you go from the same level of identification you first started to dropping below that into what's actually going on for that person, right?
Right.
The ego talks first, and then you get through that layer to what's really going on for me.
Right. Yeah.
Which isn't a disidentification necessarily. It's just a level change.
I feel like I don't have words, so I even how to respond, just more of a okay, I'm gonna work with that.
Yeah, we have it's just flower settlement. We have a model to go with.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, yeah. I have lots of tools, right, to be able to use that are at my disposal. So thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Glad you're feeling better.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. And Ashwini, we're going to break for a good news update, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
And Jenna, I'll turn it over to you for a good news update.
Great. Thanks, Michael. And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Jayo, who is here to speak with us about her experience of this week's menu item from the Bridge Walk, using a skill in support of the folks in Cantalumba. Welcome, Jayo.
Hi, Jen. Glad to be here.
Hey. You are the perfect candidate for this because you have been engaged in such an activity for quite some number of years now.
Yeah, bridge walk season is the best time. I mean, it's all the best time, but I love this time, and I love seeing, you know, how we're going to all approach it as a Sangha each year, all the just, you know, beautiful, fun things that come through, and I love our menu of contribution for this year, and yes, I was reflecting back, it's been a lot of years now of offering all kinds of fun ways that the skill of yoga, that offering that has come through as fundraisers. I was thinking about how we would call it fundraiser, right? We would put the emphasis on fun.
So tell us about some of how you know, part of the idea behind the campaign this year was, you know, as you know, the folks who have stepped forward to be kind of stewards with the Africa Project this year shared all kind of different ideas that they'd come up with, creative ways to support the project and that kind of thing. And we wanted to highlight one each week and as much as possible have someone on Good News to talk about their direct experience so that other folks can kind of go, oh, okay, huh, I could see how that might, you know, roll out and how I might apply that to, in this case, a skill that I have that I might, you know, parlay into support for the project. So maybe just say a little bit about how you've gone about that.
Yeah. I was looking at it a little bit too. I mean, I think, you know, there have been a lot of evolutions of it. So yeah, you know, some of the, like, there has just been all kinds of things. I guess for me, what's been really helpful is to let it be fun, right? You know, to keep remembering that, like, it's not about me. Yeah. It's kind of just like, what's something that can come through this human being that, by the way, could be a good time to bring people together around, and we get to do something together. And yeah, for me, that's been yoga, and it's just been all kinds of, but for, I mean, I think, you know, people have offered all kinds of amazing, you know, things, whatever people have a skill in, whether it's, you know, art or cooking or some kind of, you know, how to do your taxes. I would go to that one, or, you know, whatever those things are, right? Like all, like things that,
someone's,
you know,
going to do my taxes and then give the money to Cantaloupe. Yeah, sign me up. Yeah,
that's right. I'm in for that. Exactly. Yeah. But anyway, but it doesn't have to be, to me anyway, you know, wildly complex. I mean, so, just to, right, to not let the voices get a hold of that, but just, oh, here's something that I love to offer. I would love to share that. And, you know, how might that unfold? So, I mean, for me, it's been lots of different things. A couple of years I've done it as a birthday thing. So I just kind of said to people, like, okay, you know, my birthday is coming up and all I want is for you to come to this yoga class and donate whatever you want, you know, to the Africa Project, right? You know, and that's always just
kind of fun. Put more than one thing together, not just the skill, but add your birthday. So for my birthday, would you please come to my yoga class? I'll give you a fabulous yoga class. And then in honor of my birthday and or for your gratitude for the yoga class, here's where I'd love you to funnel the resources, the funds.
Exactly. Yeah. And that to me has just often been fun because, yeah, you know, people tend to respond of, you know, okay, it's the person's birthday. Maybe we'll, you know, so that sort of brings a little kind of fun participation right off the bat and stuff. And then I think I've talked at different times, but I've done it. So, you know, sometimes it was in person when I had a yoga studio, I would invite people to come and do that. But, you know, all of that was really simple, just kind of letting people know, like, hey, Thursday at blah, blah, blah time, you know, I'm going to offer a yoga practice. Sometimes I've done online offerings, and I think that can be great. You know, sort of thinking about that first conversation with the cold, dark times, I could relate to that place. But, you know, to me, this is a perfect time for something like, you know, invite people to have some kind of cozy, whether it is in person or it's, you know, over a Zoom or something. I've done, you know, some yoga gatherings over Zoom too, where if it is, you know, dark and cold and nobody wants to go out, but we can be together in a fun way. So I've done Halloween things over Zoom, which has been really funny. Everybody who comes in a costume, or, you know, then we'll donate to, you know, or whatever. And so, you know, you just, what is so great with that. So then, you know, we have a bunch of people show up on a Zoom in these, like, you know, silly hats or, you know, just something funny. And to me, that's so much so much the spirit of it too. Like I look so much at, you know, anything to participate in practice is like, you know, that's especially I think in these times, I mean, we've been talking as a Sangha, you know, these big times in the world, like for me, there's so much energy in that that can go into like angst and sadness and stress and what are we going to do? And there's all these terrible things, you know, and so to take that energy of like, well, you know, how could there be a fun way that some people come together and we're going to do something that we feel really good about, you know, like hanging up after a Zoom where we had a yoga practice where everybody was wearing like Elmo hats or some ridiculous, you know, just it, and everybody feels like we all, I project and I hear from people, you know, we feel good. Like we took care of our bodies in the case of yoga. It's a wonderful way to care for your well-being and you're benefiting this wonderful thing. And in that period of time, like the energy is available for life, not in the, oh my gosh, what can we do? But like, well, here's something we can do. You know, that's, I think what the Africa Project is such a beautiful way to channel our love that way, you know?
So many great points in there, Jo. And, you know, first of all, just underscoring, make it fun, you know?
Yeah.
And just kind of experiment. You know, you talked about so many different things there. Right. And especially if you're someone who maybe you haven't done it in years past and you want to jump in this year, you know, just try one thing out. You know, we'll have bridge walk season again next year and you'll have learned more about it and other ideas will drop in. Because in my experience, it's that first step of jumping in and having the experience. It's very much practice, actually. It's the direct experience that's going to inform the next things. And so you've had all these different creative ways of going about it. And I love the piece also, I imagine, especially with your, well, probably both online and in person, that you look to see, okay, so, you know, I want to offer this and, you know, yoga is partially how I make my living. So, all right, so what am I moved to do here? Okay, well, maybe, you know, one class a month is donated to the, you know, Project in Cantalombo or whatever it is. But there's that extra piece, as you were talking, I could really picture myself as a participant that, you know, often we get talked out of things we want to do, like I want to take a yoga class, but then you add that extra element of, and I'm being invited to do it on behalf of this beautiful project in Zambia. Oh, yes, that's the extra, you know, sort of oomph that I need to actually do what I want to do anyway.
Exactly. Yeah. One of the classes that I've done for it is kind of a deep relaxation class that's really lovely, you know, and that was kind of a fun way that I would talk about it with people like, you know, I mean, it's just irresponsible not to, you know, come for these, you know, you have to come relax for this good cause. I mean, it would just be, you know, the wrong thing not to come relax for this good cause, you know, but yeah, it's sort of like, you know, lovingly, you know, tricking ourselves into it, right? Doing this thing that, we know we're going to feel so good when we breathe and move and take care of our bodies and relax. And then, yes, when it's for this good thing and exactly.
It's so beautiful.
I guess two quick last things, just to say, like, just to keep it simple too, like with the in-person, a lot of times I would just have a basket, you know, just thinking of if people are starting off, you know, that I didn't do, I mean, you can do all kinds of wonderful, but I would just, you know, have a basket. Sometimes I would print out some of the lovely pictures of the kids, but, you know, sometimes I didn't get that organized, but it would just, you know, just kind of have the basket in the room and just kind of let people know, like, thank you so much for being here. And you can just leave whatever works. And you know, so people feel really, I project, comfortable too, of like whatever their move to donate, you can just discreetly drop in the basket. So that's always worked. And then online, you know, you can set up all kinds of things, but people can just Venmo you or PayPal you and, you know, put Africa in the memo. And then, you know, I could go through those and just add up like, okay, here's the, and that wasn't, you know, terribly complex. It didn't require a lot of tech, I guess, you know, to me, it was really simple. And there's a lot of fun ways to do that kind of stuff too. So, but the last thing I was going to say is just when I saw the peace quote this morning, I was like, oh, that's so it. Like, I just loved that, the Herman Hesse that was about, like the shortage of love in the world and how can we, you know, what can we do? Well, we can put more love into the world. And I was like, yes, this is what we do when we, you know, whatever our menu of contribution, however we participate with the project, you know?
Yeah. Oh, what a lovely connection. Yeah, I was very touched by that piece quote as well. I love sort of the end of it. And there, that's what you can do.
Yes, exactly.
You can be all those things in your offering, you know, whatever it is. I love that basket image. It's such a great, well, first of all, you know, great concrete suggestion and such a beautiful metaphor for all of it. I'm doing this thing that I love for this thing that I love, and I'm inviting you to participate in whatever way your heart feels moved to participate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Wow. Thank you. It's such a joy to get to participate with the project. So grateful for everything that happens there. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Me too. Me too. And to remind folks, actually just today, we had another, they send us photos and captions, and we have a steward who puts those up on the website, and I think there's a new one today. So on the news tab in Cantaloupe, but actually, it's fun. It is the graduation pictures from our grade 7 girls. So that is very
awesome.
Good inspiration on, right, this is why we're doing this. It matters.
That's
it
right.
Makes a huge difference. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Yeah. Oh, I can't wait to see. Thank you so much, Jen.
All right. Thanks, Julia. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Gesho.
Gesho. And Michael, I'll turn it back to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, J.O., and thank you, Jen. And welcome back to Open Air. And that was inspiring and fabulous, Ashwini.
It was, especially that reference to the Herman Hesse quote. It's just so, it just so turns everything on its head. Here's what you can do, rather than the ego voices that say what you cannot do.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, I don't know if, is it me?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Who is this?
Hi, my name is Leslie.
Hey, Leslie.
Hi. It's a very personal thing to talk about, but it's front and center. Been married for about 30 plus years, but separated 8 years ago. It was a very tumultuous time when we separated. My parents were dying. I ended up having an affair. And we never thought this would happen to us. And despite being separated, we kept in close contact, talk. We have two adult children. And I've been deeply practicing, for me, had a Buddhist practice and some therapy. And I feel like some really being very conscious in this way, I've, like my kids and my friends say, it's like I'm me, but I'm better. But with my separated husband, it's the opposite. And we, this question of us still hovers over us to get back together, but we don't seem to fit. And I feel so bad and guilty. I can't seem to get past the guilt of what I did. I can't seem to connect with him. We were talking about Buddhism last night. He's like, I just don't. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I'm keeping us stuck. And I can't seem to even bring my best, everything that I don't even want to say learned, but my expansive heart to this. I feel like I'm the one who broke it. I have to fix it, but it doesn't seem to work. And I want us to both live vibrant lives, and we're not. We're very stuck. So...
So Leslie, do you have a lot of familiarity with this awareness practice? Like, for example, do you know the tool of recording or listening or interviewing, for example?
No, I'm new to it. A new friend we had been at Tassajara together introduced me to this. So this is my second time being in this call, and I've been reading some of Sherry's books. So.
Yes. Well. Because what I heard you say is you have a practice, a deep practice, and there's a particular and a practice that has transformed you.
right?
Yes.
And the transformation is everywhere except in a place where you feel stuck. And you feel guilty, and you feel like it's impossible to connect because I project. There's a deep feeling that there's something wrong with you.
Yes.
Right? And so the foundation of this practice is there is nothing wrong with you, which is easy to say, but so difficult to take in when we've been listening to what we call the voices that are constantly giving us evidence that there is something wrong with you. Yeah?
Okay.
Sorry, oh, Leslie, did I lose you?
No, I'm just listening. I think some of it, too, is I was raised Catholic. You know, this
yes.
is...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I always
yeah.
was a kind person, and then I did something so unkind. And
yes.
It's mm-hmm. not even that. In a way, that's history. I still can't seem to... Yeah.
Yes. So there are two techniques or two practices that you could potentially explore to see if you can understand what's happening for you, right, or what's going on for you. So the first one is called the two-handed recording, and you can find an introduction to it on the recording and listening website. It's called the Power Tool. But the idea of it is to let that person who feels so guilty actually talk about what is going on for them. And that's what happens when you put the recorder in the right hand and you let that person talk, uncensored. It's actually a difficult thing for us to do because we can tell the story of what we did and how bad and how guilty we feel. But there we're talking to the top layer of the whole thing. We actually haven't been in touch with the person whose parents were dying, what was going on for her that caused her to do what she did. And she's never been listened to with absolute compassion and non-judgment. She's been found to be guilty, right?
Yeah.
But we have no idea what's going on for her. And so to bring that compassion that I project is your practice to the person who's suffering in the circumstance seems to be the really the one of the first steps. Because we are stuck, and then we try to will ourselves out of stuckness, which is not helpful, and as you so rightly pointed out, doesn't work.
Yeah.
So what is it, rather than solve, I mean, you have absolutely no agency or control over your partner's experience or what he feels or who he is or any of those things. But you can change yourself, which is exactly what you did with your practice. And so to investigate in conscious awareness, in conscious compassionate awareness, this person who is suffering so greatly from something she did, to understand that, and bring that into the light of conscious awareness is perhaps the first step. So the mechanics of it, it's a really powerful process, and we might have to do it a couple of times to really see the benefits of it. But the mechanics of it are just to put the recorder in the right hand and allow that person in that place to talk, then put the recorder in the left hand and just simply listen without judgment, absolute compassionate, reflective listening. Just present to that person's pain, whatever she's talking about. And then you switch that recorder on in the left hand, and just whatever arises for you to respond to her as if you were talking to your best friend, and then let her listen to it again.
Mm.
And just see what happens. Because we're never going to solve the there's something wrong with you because you did something process.
Mm-hmm.
But bringing compassion and consciousness to it transforms it in a way that's completely mysterious. And so what we need is a tool to do that.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. And Leslie, please call back in and either talk to Sherry or me or whoever is facilitating just to see, because when you try it, all those old voices will come up. And so you might feel resistant to doing it. It might not work. You might not want to persist in it. And so to be facilitated as you're practicing with the tool would be most helpful. In fact, I actually talk about it as like playing scales on the piano. First you have to learn the scales and then you have to learn the piece, right? And so often this process of being authentic, of being able to listen without judgment, of being able to bring compassion to the whole process, they're skills we have to learn. And as we build the skills, the richness of the experience deepens.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Leslie, and hope we hear from you again soon.
Thank you. Fantastic. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks for joining us, Leslie. And Ashwini, we have about 4 minutes to the hour. Would you like me to bring on another caller?
Sure.
All right. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Vanessa in North Carolina.
Hey, Vanessa.
Hey, Ashwini. Hey, Michael. I'm being told that what I wanted to share isn't big enough or important enough. So, but I just wanted to share this practice thing that happened to me before the call. I was recording and listening about the year-long assignment. And as I was doing that, I noticed that the overhead light was on and I didn't like the light. And so I was like, what I noticed was, and then there was a voice that said, oh, we can turn that off, put on the bedside table light. But what I noticed was, I think because I was recording and listening at the time that this all happened, I watched a voice or something come in and say, no, you just have to deal with the overhead light, even though you don't like it. Like, I can't even understand. It was like, this is the good, right person thing to do. You can't indulge the one who doesn't like the lighting by turning on the overhead light. And so I just watched this whole thing like right there in front of me. It was subtle, but it was really like if I hadn't have been paying attention, I probably wouldn't have turned on the bedside light. And it was, I don't know.
Yes, it is the most incredible practice success because it is so subtle. Right, Vanessa? Oh my God. There you are reading under an overhead light. It drops in. Oh, you know, I don't like that. And then the voice comes in to say, no, buck up and don't indulge the person who wants the bedside light. And I mean, it does sound so within quotes trivial only to the ego, right? Because it wants to trivialize something that is so big to see. You're there, you're present, you catch it, and you turn on the light. And there is how we save the human being.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And
you pay attention. And I mean, what she wants is a different light. It's not like she wants 16 types of ice cream or building an atom bomb.
I know. Yeah. It was just like, it was so serious, though, and I could see, I could see all the, there was a part that was like, oh, I should really do this because I don't even know, I'm tough, and I need to, it was just like, wow, it was just the light, so.
And then we are delighted, because it's truly a moment of freedom. Because if, as you said, you weren't paying attention, you would have just gone along doing the thing you were told to do, being completely controlled by a conditioned, by conditioning that it's a contest.
Yeah, right. The contest.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So.
Well, what a lovely way to end the show.
Well,
a gem of a practice.
Yeah, it was amazing. I'm glad I got to share it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Gasho.
Gasho.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Vanessa. And I love that subtlety, Ashwini, of looking deeply and paying attention and seeing what's going on there in the mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's truly, the victory is in the moment.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
All right. And thank you so much, Michael.
Yes. Thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, everyone. And go happy.
Go happy.